Okay, good morning, everybody. Bio 231, and it is Wednesday, February 8th. And we're going to cover chapter 5 today, which is integumentary system. And you can see the slides right there. Integumentary system is composed of the skin as well as some accessory structures. So we're going to talk about all these things today and even talk about some functions of the skin as well. All right, but first I want to go over a couple things. I hear a little bit of hum. Maybe I'll turn the microphone down a little bit. First thing, remember that on Monday is your first lecture exam. All right, so Monday at this time is an exam. You got a whole hour and a half to take the exam. You need a Scantron and an excellent eraser, which I might have an example in my pocket. Oh, I do. All right, so here is an excellent eraser. This is a Stettler Mars plastic eraser. Make sure you check your eraser before you use it on the test. Over the weekend, get your pencil out on a nice white piece of paper, make a mark with your pencil, and see if your eraser erases it or makes a smudge. Right? If it makes a smudge mess, then throw that eraser away. Don't bring it to class. Go get one that's in the syllabus, because I don't want you to lose points on the Scantron. Right, when I grade the test, if there's smudges all over the place, the Scantron reader won't be able to actually give you credit for maybe a right answer that you have. So that would be terrible that that happens. You will be able to review your tests afterwards, the week after. I guess you get 2 weeks to review your tests. But remember, most of you are going to be taking board exams sooner or later, and you never get board exams back. And so if you smudge up a board exam answer sheet, then you're not going to pass the board exam. And board exams are expensive. They could be $500, right? So why would you have to take a board exam again and pay another $500 just because your eraser didn't work? That would be terrible, right? So get in the habit of always turning in a nice, clean Scantron, right? So that's for Monday. The other thing is there are a couple people that aren't doing their online quizzes, and that's a real problem in a hybrid or an online class. Got to do your online quizzes, and they're every week on what day? On Tuesday, and what time on Tuesday? 11 p.m., right? So don't forget, you can take an online quiz an unlimited number of times before the deadline, but zero times afterwards. And I realize that first week was really short. There's only a couple days until Tuesday, so that first week I actually moved it to the second week, but then there was a second week at the exact same time. Some students got confused with that, and so I'm going to open up week two quiz, all right, until Monday. So if you didn't do the week two quiz because you just weren't paying really close attention to the instructions or whatever, you can go back in and take week two quiz. And even if you're already taking it, since it's an unlimited number of times, you can still go back in and retake it if you wanted to, all right, before the test on Monday. All right, so I'll send an email out with regard to that little thing. The other thing is I'm still having a little bit of problems getting the lectures loaded onto that website, but I'm sure I can get it figured out this evening. And I'll send an email out again saying what the link is, and you can go listen to the lectures again that I record with this little MP3 player right here. You can listen to it or download those lectures and listen to them however you want on your MP3 player or your computer, or burn it to a CD. Does anybody know what a CD is anymore? Yeah. Probably. Okay. Or you can record it even on a tape, I suppose, if you wanted to. And I know no one knows what a tape is anymore. Okay, so integumentary system. We see that it is your skin plus some accessory structures. All right, and so the skin is just what we're used to looking at all the time on a person's body. It covers your body. It's the largest organ system. And accessory structures would be things like hair and nail and sensory organs and nerve fibers that are within the skin. And also glands. Glands are an important part of the skin. We'll talk about their functions. And then lastly, there's even a muscle that's in skin. And we'll show you what that is. It's not so important in people, but it's important in other kinds of animals. All right, so the slide over here on the left shows a nice illustration of skin. I have a video on my website where you can go back and look at this illustration of skin, and I talk about it once again, and that's on drjgober.com with hyphens between the DR and the J and the G and Gober. You can go look at that video once again. You might want to download it to your hard drive, right-click, and then open it with DVIX Media Player, which there are plugins. You can get to that plugin in Blackboard. I put links in Blackboard for that, and that always works. Windows Media Player should work as long as you update it, but some of you I know are working with Windows Media Player version 5, and I think they're up to version 15 or 20 right now, right? So a lot of us are really behind the times with different plugins. So update your media player. Make sure it's the most current version you have, and chances are things will work really nice. All right, so the skin. So here we see skin. I can see some accessory structures like hair, and I got some glands in here. All right, and so all of these different structures perform different kinds of functions in the skin. So let's look at what the functions of skin are. All right. One of the most important functions is that it protects internal structures from infection, so it keeps bacteria out of your body. It's a nice barrier, and fungi and parasites usually, and viruses and things like that. Very few organisms know how to penetrate our integument unless we invite them into our bodies. How do we invite bacteria into our bodies? Okay, like poking your finger in your nose, or maybe poking your finger in your ear, or chewing on a fingernail or something, right? That's how we invite organisms into our body. So usually it's a hand route that we stick into some open body cavity, and bacteria then, or scratch your eye, it can get in that way as well. So to help prevent that, just washing your hands is a really good thing to do all the time, because sometimes we just have habits that we don't even know what we're doing with our fingertips all the time. And that's really important, especially during flu season like what we have right now. Hopefully no one will have a really bad cold or flu over the weekend and on Monday. And also the skin is a barrier for water. So when you have water inside your body, it's important to stay hydrated, and your skin prevents you from becoming dehydrated. And you would become dehydrated very quickly, probably within minutes, if you didn't have your integument protecting you. All right, so those are the two most probably important things. But these other things are probably just as important. Regulating body temperature. All right, so if we were to measure your temperature, what would it be? Would somebody over here be 90 degrees, and somebody over here 88, and somebody up over there 92, and then somebody up over there 98, and then somebody 100? What can you tell me about body temperature across the population? It's pretty much constant. It varies a little bit, right? But it's basically 98.6, and that's for everybody, and that should be you pretty much no matter what you're doing. And if you start to heat up because you're exercising, what happens? You start sweating, and that involves your integument. That cools you down back to normal body temperature. All right, so the skin is important for maintaining temperature when you're cold, but also releasing heat when you become hyperthermic in both circumstances. All right, the skin also produces an important vitamin that we're learning more and more about all the time. We think it's a nice cancer fighter, all right, but it's also important for absorbing calcium from your diet, so it promotes strong bones, and that's vitamin D. All right, so vitamin D is real important, and you need sunlight. You need sunlight to shine on your skin in order to make an active form of vitamin D. So sunlight is important as well. And then another important function is sensation. It's a way that you can communicate with your environment. So your integument helps you communicate with the environment. What kind of sensations have you experienced with your skin? Temperature, somebody said heat, yeah? Like for instance, if you grab a hot plate or something, all right, you'll learn to drop the plate and prevent your fingers or hands from being burned. What else can you sense with your skin? So temperature, vibration, for instance, and touch is important. And if you ever cut yourself, can you feel that? Yeah, there are pain receptors as well, right? And so pain receptors just warn you that there's some kind of damaging stimulus that's being applied to your body. And then when you learn there's some damaging stimulus being applied to your body, what do you do? You withdraw your body from that damaging stimulus and you protect your body from injury that way. All right, so a lot of important sensations. All right, so let's start talking about some anatomy of the skin. There are two main layers. There's the epidermis and the dermis. And this term epi right here means on top of. All right, so where would you find the epidermis? It is on top of the dermis, which is the second layer. So those are the two main layers of the skin. In more proper anatomical language, the epidermis is superficial and the dermis is deep. Right, so we don't really like to say on top of. We like to say superficial and deep. And the epidermis is an epithelium because it covers a surface. And the kind of epithelium it is a stratified squamous epithelium, and it might have either four or five layers depending on where you look in the body. The one that's four layers is called thin skin. The one that has five layers is called, take a guess, is called, if one is thick and the one that has more layers then would be called thick skin, right? So there's thin and thick skin. We'll look at some examples of those. All right, the dermis, right, is below or deep to the epidermis. It's not an epithelium, it's connective tissue. And it has two main layers itself. We're going to talk about those. The superficial layer is a papillary and the deep layer is a reticular layer. We'll go into some depth what those are. And then there is another layer that we always talk about in this part of the class. It's not part of the integument, but since it's right there to look at, we mention it in class. And that is the hypodermis. And guess what hypo means? If epi means on top of, hypo means below. And the hypodermis indeed is deep to the dermis. And then, of course, it's also deep to the epidermis as a result. So it's not part of the integumentary system. It's connective tissue, but it's areolar connective tissue. Sometimes we call it superficial fascia. So it's a connective tissue that connects your skin to underlying structures like muscle and bone. So that's one of its main jobs. And the other main job is that, notice what kind of tissue is the hypodermis. If you look at the PowerPoint, it's not a PowerPoint slide, but if you look at the image right here, it looks like adipose connective tissue. And so it's an important place where we store energy in the form of lipids or fats. And a person might store up to as much as 50% of their fat stores in this subcutaneous layer or the hypodermis. And so sometimes we call the skin the cutaneous membrane, which is the epidermis and dermis. So the subcutaneous layer would be the layer underneath the skin, and that is the hypodermis right over here. Okay, so those are some of the main layers of the skin. Epidermis, dermis, and hypodermis, and then we talked about the papillary layer of the dermis and the reticular layer of the dermis. I'll go into a little bit more detail with some of those things. All right, what about some accessory structures? What do I have on the word slide next? Okay, we're going to talk about epidermis before we talk about accessory structures. All right, even on this slide right here, this illustration, can you see that there's a dark line right here and then a little bit less dark region and then kind of a very light region and then another dark region? That means that the epidermis, even though it's a layer of the skin, there are sublayers within the epidermis. And we got to know something about these sublayers. So here is the basement membrane. Here's the apical surface. Here's the free space above the epidermis. So that's just a nice typical kind of epithelium that you're used to looking at. And right next to the basement membrane is what we call the stratum basale. It's the living layer of the epidermis. These cells are undergoing mitosis, they're reproducing, and when they reproduce, then they break away from the stratum basale and move up into the next layer right here. Okay, and then they move up into the next layer. And then eventually they end up in the most superficial layer, which is this dark line over here. And as they move from the stratum basale or basement membrane, they move farther and farther away from these blood vessels that are in the dermis. And what's the result of that when they move far away from those blood vessels? They run out of oxygen, they run out of nutrients, and they die as a result. So the layers, the cells in the superficial layer right here are dead already. Okay. The cell shape down in the basal region are like cuboidal or columnar cells, and the shape of the cells in the superficial region right here are flat. What's another name for flat, or a better anatomical name? Squamous, right? So as the cells migrate from the basal region to the superficial region or apical region right here, they go from being alive to dead, and in shape from columnar to squamous. They change their shape. Right, and the cells in the stratum corneum right here, we say are cornified. And a cornified cell is a dead cell, and it's filled with a chemical compound that we call keratin. And keratin can be confused with collagen. What kind of tissue has collagen? Is it in an epithelium? Or is it in a muscle or a connective tissue? What kind of tissue? It's connective tissue. It's an important fiber in connective tissues. And remember, you got to know fibers by their strength. Is collagen a strong fiber, intermediate in strength, that's stretchy? Or is it really not very strong at all? Is it a weak fiber? Which one is it? It's the strongest one, right? So collagen, and where else do we find, where do we find collagen? Okay, is it inside the cell or outside the cell? Outside. Yeah, what do we call that space? That's the matrix. Collagen is in the matrix of a connective tissue, right? Keratin, on the other hand, since an epithelium has very little extracellular space, that's not where it exists. It actually exists inside the cell. What do we call that space inside of a cell? That is the intracellular space. Intracellular space is where we find keratin. Collagen, on the other hand, we find in the extracellular space or the matrix. So we find different chemical compounds in a little bit different areas. Nonetheless, the similarity is that keratin provides for a lot of strength and durability of a tissue, and that's the job of collagen as well, provides strength and durability. But keratin is intracellular. So sometimes these cells are called keratinocytes because their job is to produce keratin, and they get filled up with keratin so that skin is kind of strong. It's almost like a little bit of armor plating on the outside of our body, but it's still pliable. Okay, so keratin is made by these cells right here. All right, so those are the layers, right? It goes from stratum basale up to stratum corneum, which is the most superficial layer. Sometimes the stratum corneum produces a callus, which is a thickened region of the epidermis, especially the stratum corneum right here. It becomes really, really thick, and these cells respond by producing even more keratin, so it's a hard spot and it's a raised spot, and sometimes it can be pretty painful, right? Corns, right, usually form, it's a callus that forms over some kind of bony prominence of an underlying structure, some bone that's underneath the skin, and it's kind of a conical-shaped hyperplasia of the stratum corneum that, again, is designed to protect your body, but since it's being bumped into all the time and rubbed, it gets irritated and it's painful. All right, so let's look at some of the layers of skin. So I want to go a couple slides in this direction. All right, so here's a micrograph. We're going to look in just this part of the illustration right here. So I see the basement membrane right where the cursor is. I see the basement membrane right here. So here's the basal surface of the epithelium. Here's the apical surface. Here's that free space above the epidermis. And I can see some layers right here. All right, so here is the stratum basale. It could be one or two cell layers thick. And this is the living layer because it's very close to blood vessels that are in the dermis. And this is the layer that is undergoing mitosis. This is the living layer that's reproducing, right? Because these cells up in the stratum corneum are rubbing off all the time. We rub some off, right? In that very first lab, looked at them underneath the microscope. And after mitosis, then the cells move up into this next layer right here. This is what we call the stratum spinosum. Because these cells are glued together with special junctions called desmosomes. And as the skin stretches out, the desmosomes still hold the cells together, like I see a little desmosome right here. And that changes the shape of the cell into a more squamous shape. But in particular, you see this little point right here? these cells get really spiky. I see another point here and another point here, and I see, oh, like 2 points right over here. So these turn into spiky, pointy cells, and that's what this layer is named after, stratum spinosum, because it has all these spines sticking off the cells. All right, and then they get pushed up through time into the next more superficial region. And when I look at these cells, I see some granules inside the cells. And these granules are filled with molecules of pre-keratin, molecules that will eventually become keratin, but are on their way into becoming keratin. All right, let me change this over. All right, so these are granules made of the precursor molecules to keratin, but also some other precursors of lipid molecules. And lipid is an oil, and that forms a permeability barrier. So then the oil is secreted on the outside of these cells, and so that prevents water from inside your body from moving through your skin to the outside world and dehydrating you. All right, so that's what all these granules are right here. And since this layer is loaded with granulated cells, we call it the stratum granulosum. And underneath the microscope and even in the models in the lab, you can see these granules, no problem. So it's pretty easy to know this layer. All right, and then they move up into this layer right here. These cells are basically dead, so this is the stratum corneum. So these are the four layers that we find in a typical kind of skin that we call thin skin. You got the stratum basale, stratum spinosum, stratum granulosum, and stratum corneum. And you should know that cells are alive down over here and dead by the time they reach the apical surface. Okay. Since these cells are alive and reproducing by mitosis, sometimes we call this the stratum germinativum. And what does it mean to germinate? If you were a seed, you would know, but we're not seeds, right? So maybe you'd have to take a biology or a botany class, right? Germination is when you take a seed that's not growing. It's like in a state of suspended animation. It can withstand long periods of time, even drying out, all right? And then when you put it in soil and water it, what happens to that seed? It turns into a living plant. The seed changes, right? It comes to life. So germination is when a seed starts to grow by mitosis and come alive. And so that's sometimes why people call this the stratum germinativum, or germinating layer, because it's the living layer. All right, so this is a really good example of thin skin. The other kind of skin that we have on our body is what we call thick skin. Here's a micrograph of thick skin. And I also see some dermis on this particular picture as well, so the scale is not exactly the same. But what does my eye catch right away? Well, here is the apical surface, so here's the free space above the apical surface, and then here is the basement membrane of the epidermis. So the epidermis goes from here all the way up to here. All right, so that's the epidermis. And then what do we have below the epidermis in this region here? What's deep to the epidermis? That would be the dermis, right? So here is the dermis. So let's analyze these slides and take a look. All right, so just superficial to the basement membrane, this dark layer, which is one or two cell layers thick, that's the stratum basale, that's the living layer. And then these are the spiky cells right here, that's the stratum spinosum. And then here's a really thin layer with cells that have granules in them, that's the stratum granulosum. And in thick skin, there's one other layer, which I can just barely see. I see a white line running right through here. It's a very clear layer. And in Latin, lucid means clear. When somebody's speaking lucidly, that means you understand what they're saying. They're communicating really nicely, very clearly. So this is called the stratum lucidum, because it's just a very thin, clear layer. That's the additional layer that we have in thick skin. And then, of course, since it's thick skin, look at the stratum corneum. It's really thick compared to thin skin. All right, so this would be a really good example of thick skin because it's got all five layers. All right, so you want to practice, make sure you can say all five layers for the test and also for the practicum when the second practicum comes around, because that will be on the second practicum. So I don't know. Let's just write it out. You got stratum basale, stratum stratum spinosum here, then granulosum, stratum lucidum, and stratum corneum, just in that order. The other thing I see on this slide, I see these ridges, like these fingertips poking up. The dermis is poking up into the epidermis. We call this a dermal papillae. So here's a papillae, here's one right here, here's one right here. These are very prominent in thick skin, and when you have a bunch of dermal papillae, that projection then even projects all the way up to the surface of the skin. And if you look at your fingertips, does it look flat and smooth, or do you see ridges on your fingertip? Yeah, you see ridges. What do we call those things? Like fingerprints, right? So these dermal papillae actually come together to form fingerprints even on the surface of the epidermis right here. And is that a characteristic of thick skin or thin skin? Thick skin only. You don't have fingerprints on your neck or your nose or anything like that. You don't have to worry about leaving a fingerprint on something if you just hit it with your nose, right? Like if you're leaning up a glass window or something, there's no fingerprint there. It's only on your fingertips and on your toes, soles of your feet, palms of your hand, because that's thick skin. That's where you find thick skin. Okay. All right, so from the basement membrane deep down here is the dermis, and you should know the two layers. The most superficial layer has very little collagen in it. It's an areolar connective tissue. It has some. It's sort of strong. It's probably stronger than the epidermis, but it's called the papillary layer because it makes up these dermal papillae. Right? It has blood vessels, has some connective tissue, collagen, just not a whole lot. But if you go deeper into the dermis, look what fiber you run into now. Does this remind you of anything you've looked at already? These are collagen fibers. Right? So the deeper layer of the dermis is loaded with collagen fibers. And don't forget, collagen is extracellular. And this kind of connective tissue is what we call dense, irregular connective tissue. And it is the reticular layer. There really aren't reticular fibers in this region. It's kind of a misnomer. It's reticular, I think it was named reticular because these collagen fibers go in all different kinds of directions. Not in one particular direction, but in all different directions. And so, for instance, we're looking at the hide of an animal right now. This could be a cow or a horse or something. And people use that product from the animal to make leather. Right? So you can take the hide of an animal, get rid of the epidermis, scrape off this papillary layer, and what are you left with? The reticular layer, and it's loaded with collagen, all right? But what do we call that product? It's a man-made product at that point in time. That's what we call leather, right? So leather is just an irregular dense connective tissue, which is just made out of collagen. So you can look at your shoes or your leather coat or gloves or whatever and know it's just these collagen fibers that come from the reticular layer of the dermis of some kind of animal. Okay. So collagen is really strong. So if you lacerate or cut your skin, right, it's relatively easy to fix because you can put a stitch or a suture and bring the cut edges together because that suture won't pull out because why? Why is that suture nice and stable? Because of all the collagen that's in the reticular layer right here. Right? So that's a really strong layer. That's the strongest layer of the skin right here. This reticular layer. And you can even see all these collagen fibers in it. All right, so the Monday class, I think at 7:30 in lab, I said for the quiz, it's going to be labeling that one picture of the skull, 7.4. Okay, and I forgot to mention the second part of the quiz is to draw and label the layers of thick skin. So I want to show you how to draw the layers of thick skin on the board, which you should be able to do for that quiz for next week. If I have a marker. Oh, here's a marker. We're in luck to do that. All right, so let's see. I'll turn that light on. Oh, I'll turn those two on. All right, so what are the two main layers of skin? The two main layers. You got this here, and you got this here. And here's apical. This is the apical region. And then here's the basal region of an epithelium, but we call it an epidermis because Oh, no, sorry. Basal region, right here, basal region of the epidermis. So between the apical and basal region, what do we call that? That's the epidermis. And what's below the epidermis? The dermis. We're almost done. Hypodermis is not part of the skin, so I wouldn't even draw that on this diagram right here. Okay, so the basement membrane is right through here. I'm going to erase these terms because on the quiz I don't even want those terms on there. Okay, you could put them on if you want, but that's just kind of complicating the diagram. I just said that to get you oriented. So, let's talk about the dermis, the two main layers of the dermis. There is one layer that has some collagen fibers, but not very many. And then there's a deeper layer that is what? Loaded with collagen, a lot of collagen, which makes this layer of the dermis really, really strong. And these collagen fibers are oriented in all kinds of different directions, right? So it's dense, irregular connective tissue. And anybody remember what we call this layer of the dermis, the deep layer of the dermis? That's the reticular layer, all right? So I'll just label that right here. Reticular layer. And then this one over here that has areolar connective tissue in it. This is the papillary layer. And then we're done with the dermis. Okay? Which then takes us to the epidermis. We have right here. And these cells are kind of cuboidal. So I'm going to make these kind of cuboidal. Maybe sometimes they look like columns. Right, and it's one, maybe two layers of cells thick, but it's the deepest layer of the epidermis. This is what we call the stratum basale, which means what? The basal layer of the epidermis. These cells move up closer to the surface of the skin, and they turn into spiky cells, because they're stuck together and they get twisted and contorted a little bit. So how am I going to draw spiky cells? I don't know, maybe something like that. All right, so here's just my little representation of what a spiky cell looks like. Okay, it has cells with all these little spikes on them because they're glued together. And this is a little bit thicker layer. All right, so I'll make it a little bit thicker. Spiky cells. It's a stratum, just like basale, but it's stratum spinosum, which means spiky. Stratum spinosum, and let's see, we want it thick skin. All right, and it doesn't matter if this is thick or thin skin, because the next layer is going to be filled with cells with all these granules in them. What layer do we call that? Stratum? Granulosum. Okay, then superficial to the stratum granulosum is a special little layer right here that we find only in thick skin. And there are cells in there, but they're very, very hard to see. They look clear or white. So this is the stratum lucidum. That's stratum lucidum. And then the most superficial and last layer are going to be layers of dead cells filled with keratin. So what do we call a cell that's dead and filled with keratin? It is a cornified cell. And so we call that the stratum corneum. That's the last layer. All right, so if you can draw something like that, it doesn't even have to be as beautiful as that drawing right there. Just something that's similar that you can show that there's some kind of difference between these different layers. But for the lecture test, you should probably know what kind of tissue this is in the papillary layer. I'll label it. You don't have to label it on the quiz for next week, but for the lecture test on Monday, papillary you should know is areolar. Okay, reticular is dense. Irregular, CT, areolar is a CT, and that this is a, what kind of epithelium is that? That should be really easy to recognize now. Stratified squamous epithelium, yeah. Okay. All right, so that I think is pretty good for the epithelium. Oh, but I have a couple questions. What is the extracellular glycolipid good for that's secreted by those keratinocytes? Glycolipid, yeah, goes on the outside of the cells, and it is a permeability barrier, right? It prevents water from evaporating from your body, that lipid. Okay, I know some of you use this trick at home. For instance, you're going to hold a party, or maybe not, maybe you're just going to have dinner, and you're going to have a little hors d'oeuvre. You have, you cut up some lemon, okay, which is watery, and then you got some caviar. So you got some lemon, a slice of lemon and some caviar, but you want to put it on a cracker so that it's easy to eat, right? And if you put a lemon with watery caviar on a cracker, what's going to happen to the cracker? It's going to get soggy, right? And you won't be able to pick it up with your fingers. So what can you do to keep that cracker from getting soggy because you put some water-type material on top of it? You can put a little layer of butter or oil or something, right? And so then the water from the lemon won't leak into the cracker and the cracker will stay nice and crunchy. Same thing for your skin. It has a lipid around the cells that prevents water from moving outside your body, okay? So that's kind of handy. All right, what about keratin? Is it intracellular or extracellular? Keratin is intracellular as compared to collagen, which is extracellular. So don't forget, collagen is in a connective tissue. Keratin is in skin, so and that is what a stratified squamous epithelium. Kind of similar concepts, but just a little bit different. All right, so here you see the layers in thick skin, basale, spinosum, granulosum, lucidum, all right, and stratum corneum. All right, so that's what you have to know about, at least that superficial layer. What about the dermis right here? We talked a little bit about it already, and I can see the dermis. And remember, there's two main layers. These things are called papillae, dermal papillae. So this is the papillary layer. That's areolar connective tissue, but the strong layer of the dermis is this deeper layer right here that we call reticular layer, and it's the strong layer because it has collagen, it's dense, irregular CT. You can overstretch the papillary layer or even this reticular layer because remember, this is not dense, regular connective tissue. These collagen fibers are oriented in all different directions. So for instance, when somebody gains a lot of weight in a hurry, like when you're pregnant, when you become pregnant and the baby gets bigger and bigger, or when the fetus gets bigger and bigger, right, and it stretches the abdominal skin out, it can damage these fibers right here, and they're called striae when skin gets damaged because it gets stretched too fast. It can't grow, okay? Now, I don't know any way to prevent that or to treat that after you have it. There's probably all kinds of people selling things, but there's probably really no way to prevent that from happening. Okay, so the layers, we got papillary layer, that's a superficial one, areolar connective tissue. Oh, one thing I didn't mention, it contains a subpapillary plexus. Let's go back and take a look of where that is. All right, so here is a dermal papillae right here. Oh, and here's another dermal papillae. Look, there's a blood vessel that pokes up into the dermal papillae, and I see another blood vessel poking up over here. That's called the subpapillary vascular plexus, right? And so that's just a way for nutrients and oxygen in blood to nourish this whole region of the epidermis, even though these blood vessels don't go into the epidermis, because remember, the epidermis is an epithelium. You've probably experienced that before. There are nerve fibers that go up into the epidermis. Have you ever had a paper cut? Unfortunately, your finger went down the edge of a paper and it kind of cut your finger and it really stung. And you don't even want to look because you think there's going to be blood all over the place, right? Because it felt really bad. And then you get some courage up and you take a look and you see like a little cut right there and there's no blood. And you go, gee whiz, what's all that about? It sure felt bad, but I don't see any blood. Why is that? Because the epidermis right here doesn't contain blood vessels, right? It's an epithelium, no blood vessels, but there are nerve endings there. So what you cut was just a really superficial cut into the epidermis, but not deep enough to damage any blood vessels in the dermis. Thank goodness. Okay. All right, I do want to talk some more about this particular slide. Because we talked about the layers of the skin, but we haven't talked about accessory structures. Where are those in your notes? Oh, we do have some accessory structures. All right, I'll get to that in just a little bit. I want to show you something that is your exam figure or very similar to an exam figure, which is this one right here. So here is the basement membrane for the epidermis. So here is the epidermis, and I can see all the layers. Let's go over the layers really quick once again. Here's the stratum basale right here. Then above that is the stratum spinosum, and you can see the all the desmosomes connecting cells, and they kind of look spiky in this region right here. Then they move up into this region right here. So here are the keratinocytes filled with these granules of prekeratin and glycolipids. Right, so this is the stratum basale, stratum spinosum, stratum granulosum, and then on top of that are the dead keratinocytes, so that's the stratum corneum right there. Now I see some other kinds of cells that are pretty important. I see a cell right here that has all these projections sticking out of it. And this is a special cell that's an immune cell. It provides immunity to your body. So this kind of can crawl around between these cells and send out projections. And it's always looking for bacteria and fungi and other kinds of cells that don't belong in your body. And when it bumps into a bacteria, guess what it does? It kills it. So we call that a dendritic cell. An older name for this kind of cell is a Langerhans cell. And I think they ask you at the back of the book the name of a dendritic cell. That's a Langerhans. Maybe I should write that down. You find that in the epidermis. Langerhans is kind of like almost like a white blood cell that you have in your circulatory system, right? So it prevents infection to a large degree. That's the job of this dendritic or Langerhans cell. Here is another cell. It's kind of like a modified neuron. It's a tactile epithelial cell for very light pressure. And then we can see this nerve ending that's going to take that information, touch information to your brain for your appreciation. Another kind of cell that we see kind of looks gray to me. And it has some projections coming off and in between the keratinocytes right here. And, you know, it'd be really nice if that was kind of like brown colored. Is it more beige? Can anybody see the color of this cell right here? Gray. Yeah, okay, it's gray. And it's a melanocyte. The job of a melanocyte is not to produce keratin, but another kind of compound, which is intracellular as well. And that compound is called melanin. Melanin is a natural sunscreen that a melanocyte produces because sunlight contains a lot of different kinds of energy, different colors of light, red, blue, green, but also other colors that we can't see, like ultraviolet light. We can't see that with our eyes. And ultraviolet light is a relatively high energy wavelength, and it is very damaging to your body. It's damaging to your cornea. It's damaging to your skin. And it can cause mutations in the cells in the stratum basale and even deeper layers. And then these cells turn cancerous as a result, right? So when you expose your skin to sun, not only does it damage the cells, it can even damage fibers that are down in the dermis. Elastic fibers are very sensitive to sunlight and collagen fibers. So sunlight is very damaging to skin. But it's the job of these melanocytes to protect your skin from the damaging effects of sunlight. And of course, people that have a heritage to parts of the planet that are equatorial, then they have skin that is darker compared to people that have a heritage or come from their parents, right, way back in history from the more northern or southern latitudes on the planet where the sun isn't so strong. So typically they have lighter skin. All right, so the darker your skin is, then you have melanocytes that are producing more melanin, and that melanin is a brown to black pigment. All right, so melanin is a brown to black pigment, and a pigment is just any kind of chemical compound that absorbs light. All right, so the kind of pigment that we have in these chairs right here, because they have a certain color to them, is a yellow pigment. And that pigment, that chemical compound, is absorbing all colors of the rainbow, like blue and green and purple and red. It's absorbing that energy, but what color it's not absorbing is yellow, so it gets reflected back to your eye, and that's what you see. Okay, so that's how pigment works, whether it's in fingernail polish or paint or even in a person's body. Right, you have pigments that absorb different colors of light, because in sunlight it contains all the colors of the rainbow, including those damaging wavelengths that we call ultraviolet light. So that's the job of this melanocyte. It produces what? Natural sunscreen to protect you from the sun. All right, so you got the Langerhans cells, which fights infections. You got melanocytes that protect you from the sun. And then these other cells are just keratinocytes, right, that are responsible for producing keratin that makes these cells a little bit stronger. All right, so there are some. So this is a really good diagram, so you can see the different layers. And would this be thick skin or thin skin? Thin skin, because it's missing the stratum lucidum in this area right here. Okay. Okay, let's talk about skin color for just a little bit. So a pigment is a chemical that can absorb light. Not all light in particular, but certain wavelengths of light. And blood, what color does blood look like?
Red,
right? So it's got a pigment in there, and that pigment comes from a molecule called hemoglobin that makes blood look red. All right, so the natural sunscreen material is called melanin. And what kind of cell produces melanin? A melanocyte, right? And that's in the stratum basale, but it has those projections that can move up into the stratum spinosum. Moles and age spots that we have on our body are an increased number of melanocytes in some just local region on our body, so it looks a little bit darker. Some people have freckles, and it just means that you have the same number of melanocytes in that area, but those cells, those melanocytes, are a little bit more active compared to neighboring cells, so they produce a little bit more melanin, so that spot looks a little bit darker compared to other spots. Albinism is a condition. It's an abnormal condition. I wouldn't really call it a disease, but it's abnormal because it's not very prevalent in our population. Normal is what most people have, right? Abnormal just means some kind of deviation from what most people have. But albinism is a condition which is an inability to produce melanin, right? So when you look at somebody that has albinism, what color does their skin look like? It just looks white. What about the color of their hair? White, because they can't produce pigments, right? And their lips, what about their lips? Not white, because when you look at your lips, what you really see, most of you see pink. I don't see pink because I can't see pink, right? But they're pink. I know they're pink because what you see is blood that's very superficial. So our lips are, the skin on our lips are pretty superficial. So it looks pink because you see blood that's flowing through your lips. So even somebody that has albinism, their lips are still going to be pink. And their eyes might be pink because you can then see blood that's inside their eyes. Okay? And so their hair is white, skin is white. And what does that mean for them, though? What is one problem that can develop if somebody has albinism? Okay, they can get cancer pretty easy because their body isn't producing melanin. They have no natural sunscreen in their body. So they can go out into sunlight in Los Angeles during the summertime and they can get burned just being in sunlight probably for just a minute or two. Okay, maybe somebody in here who's really fair skin has that same problem, even though you don't suffer from albinism. If you don't have a lot of melanocytes, you can get sunburned. But that allows those ultraviolet rays from the sun to penetrate your body, and they're certainly prone to different skin cancers like squamous cell carcinoma and basal cell carcinoma. They still have melanocytes, they just don't produce melanin, so even the melanocytes can turn cancerous, and that's the most dangerous form. Even somebody that has really dark skin can still get a melanoma, which is a cancer from melanocytes, and that's a very dangerous and quickly spreading kind of cancer because these melanocytes really don't develop from skin cells, they actually come from your nervous system. So they come from nervous tissue, and then during development, before you're born, they move up into the skin, they move from the nervous system into the skin, so their natural ability is to move around inside your body. And when they turn cancerous, they still retain that ability to move around, which means that they can form metastases in other parts of your body pretty easily because that's part of their normal job, their normal makeup is to move around inside your body. All right, so that's albinism. And probably everybody, you know, if you live in a place that's really close to the equator, like Australia, and you go outside and you look at Australians that are outside, you're going to always see that they're wearing a hat. It's really, really uncommon to find a person walking around outside in Australia without a hat because what are they doing? They're protecting their nose and their ear from sunlight just by doing that. And that would be really good if you were to do that too, even in Los Angeles. All right, let's talk about a different color, cyanosis. Cyanosis is due to blood, okay, that is that you can see through the epidermis, because remember, you have blood vessels underneath, only in the dermis right here. And when blood is oxygenated, indeed, it is red. But blood that you have in veins, which is relatively low in oxygen, is no longer a bright red. What kind of color is it? It's blue. So if you have blood that is not oxygenated, it's going to have a blue color to it. It might have a little bit of red, but it's mostly blue colored. And we call that cyanosis. When somebody has a blue cast to them or blue skin, we call that a cyanotic condition, which means that their blood does not contain the proper amounts of oxygen. All right? And that's especially important, for instance, right, as measured right away on a newborn baby. All right, because if a newborn baby is cyanotic or has blood going through their body that's not oxygenated, of course they won't do very well. They could die. They certainly won't thrive. And that might be due to a malformation of their lungs. Their lungs are not developed because lungs allow oxygen to enter your body. So a premature baby is very sensitive to that. Or it could be a malformation of blood vessels that take blood from the heart to the lungs to become oxygenated. So it could be due to a cardiac problem or a vascular problem or a lung problem when somebody is born cyanotic. And of course you want to find out immediately what's going on in that particular case. So what kind of imaging study would you order on a newborn baby if you want to look at their heart to see if it's malformed or blood vessels that are attached to the heart, if they're attached improperly? What kind of, an ultrasound, but what region of the body would you really want to look at? The mediastinum, okay? That's why it's important to know that term, okay? Because you want to diagnose that cyanotic condition right away. Another condition that a baby could be born with is jaundice. And it's not yellow, okay? It's not brown. It's not brown. It's not blue. I'm sorry. It's not blue. It is yellow. When somebody has a yellow cast, it's actually kind of a bright yellow. And even if somebody has really dark skin because you have a lot of melanocytes, if you're jaundiced, at least the whites of your eyes will be yellow. Your fingertips will be yellow, okay, underneath your fingernails. And that could be due to a number of different conditions, all right? And so where that yellow pigment comes from is from the chemical compound that makes blood look red under normal circumstances, right? Blood looks red. But if red blood cells are breaking down, if the blood is being destroyed for some reason, that chemical compound called hemoglobin is released into the body, and then it turns into a yellow compound called bilirubin. Okay? And that's a bright yellow color. So if a newborn baby is bright yellow, for instance, it could mean that there's a reason why their blood is breaking down very quickly. And that could be due to immune reaction between the mom and the fetus if the blood type isn't exactly right. Or maybe there is damage to the fetus's liver. If there's liver damage or if there's immune reaction with the mom, that will produce jaundice. And adults can be jaundiced as well, for instance, if something happens to their liver, maybe as a result of cancer or maybe chemotherapy that you're taking to kill a particular kind of cancer. The liver might be sensitive to it, and it, when it reduces function, you might become jaundiced as well as an adult. So jaundice is what? Yellow. Cyanosis is blue. Albinism is white, right? So all these different kinds of conditions, which is really nice because you don't need any really fancy imaging studies or a lot of tests to tell that something's wrong when you see that. It's a really easy trait to see. Okay, birthmarks. They're in the dermis. That's just a localized area in the dermis that has a lot of blood vessels. So birthmarks probably have a little reddish color to them because that's the color of blood. So there is just a special vascular knot or ball of blood vessels in the dermis that that look a little darker compared to other regions in the body. Okay, accessory structures. Let's look at some accessory structures. Let's go back to that slide right here. Let's look at some accessory structures. So here we have a Pacinian corpuscle. Kind of looks like an onion. This is for deep pressure. So when somebody shakes your hand really, really hard or pinches your finger, these are the kinds of receptors that get stimulated, and then they send signals to the brain for your appreciation. There are free nerve endings in the skin. Free nerve endings have a couple different functions. Temperature is one of their functions that they can sense. You have free nerve endings for cold. You have a separate set of nerve endings for hot. And depending on which nerve endings get stimulated, then you can figure out what the temperature is on the body. All right. Also, if you cut some of these nerve endings, right, they will send pain signals to the brain. So pain is also mediated by free nerve endings. That's the third kind of sense. So free nerve endings for pain sensation and temperature, both hot and cold. In certain parts of the body, and I don't see it on this diagram, but up in these dermal papillae, the models in lab show it very nicely. There's something that's called a Meissner's corpuscle. It kind of looks like a Pacinian corpuscle, but it's a lot smaller. And it's for very light touch. And some people can actually read by using those things, right, on their fingertips. They can place their fingertips on a surface and feel bumps and little dots, and we call that Braille. And then people can read just using their fingertips because of the sensitivity of Meissner's corpuscles in these dermal papillae right here. All right, so those are some sensory organs. Another accessory structure is this muscle. This is an arrector pili muscle. You can't control it because it's a smooth muscle. It's under involuntary control, and it contracts when you're scared or when you're cold, and it pulls on this hair follicle, so it's going to pull this hair follicle up out of the body. Right? Well, it's not going to pop out of your body, but it will form a little pimple right here. What do we call that little pimple that surrounds this hair follicle? That is a goosebump, yeah, when you're cold or scared, all right? And that's produced by this arrector pili muscle. That's an accessory structure. And then that leaves us with a couple glands that we see. Here is an eccrine sweat gland. It produces sweat. In lab, we're going to learn of another kind of sweat gland. And sweat that's produced by an eccrine gland is watery, but it contains some salts. And that sweat goes through this duct to the surface of the skin, gets to the surface of the skin, and it evaporates. And when it evaporates, what does that do to your body? That cools you down, because it takes a lot of energy to evaporate water. And as in that process, it cools you down. Here is another kind of gland. It's always associated with a hair follicle. All right, so here's a follicle. Here's another hair follicle. Here's a cross-section of that gland. Here is that gland where it's not cut. It's a sebaceous gland, and it secretes not sweat, but a compound that we call sebum. And sebum is an oily compound, right? So that oil lubricates the shaft of the hair as it's growing out of your body, and the oil then goes to the surface of your skin, and then again, that forms a nice permeability barrier so that you don't dehydrate, and it keeps your skin moist so it doesn't crack. Right, it keeps your skin from drying out. So that's a pretty important gland right there. All right, so that's pretty much it for accessory structures, muscles, glands, sebaceous versus sweat glands. The other kind of gland that we look at in lab, which looks like an eccrine sweat gland, but it's a lot bigger. It's about maybe three times the size. It's called an apocrine gland. I'll talk about apocrine glands in lab. There's a couple other modified sweat glands that you have in your body. I don't have pictures for you. One is called a ceruminous gland. And a ceruminous gland is in your ear canal. And it secretes a sweat which is very oily, but it's a long chain oil, so it's waxy, right? And that just lubricates your eardrum so that it doesn't crack. And of course, if it doesn't come out of your body, it can plug your ear canal and you can't hear very well as a result of that. But that's a modified apocrine gland. And a mammary gland is a sweat gland as well, but it's been modified, so instead of secreting sweat, what does it secrete? Nutrients, right, to nurse a newborn baby. Okay, different kinds of nutrients come out of a mammary gland early on. It doesn't produce much milk, but it produces antibodies, which then protect the infant from infection. Later on, after a couple of days, breasts become more competent, and they'll secrete milk as well, which is a nice, perfect nutrition for a newborn baby, as well as antibodies as well. All right, then the last accessory structure is a nail. Let's take a look at a nail. Where do we have some nails? Oh, here's a good nail. These are some exam figures. Right, so here's the free edge of the nail. Here's the body of the nail. And here's some lateral fold of the skin that's growing over the base of the nail over here. And that's what we call sometimes a cuticle, right? A proper name is the epinicium of the nail, which is just some epidermis that is growing over that edge of the nail. All right, so let's take a look at a cross-section through a fingertip. So here again is a free edge. Here's the body of the nail, and it grows out from underneath the finger, and this is the area of the nail where it's growing, and it's called the nail matrix. And even though it's the nail matrix, right, it's not connective tissue. We just call it the matrix. So if you damage this part of the nail, if you destroy this part of the nail, can your nail grow back? Absolutely, all right? But if you damage the matrix, will the nail ever grow back? It won't, right? So that's the deep part, right? That's the proximal part of the nail that's growing. That's the nail matrix. Here is the root of the nail that's underneath the epinicium, but the root of the nail is already filled with dead cells. You can actually damage that part of the nail and it will grow back as long as the nail matrix hasn't been damaged. And the nail is just made up of keratinocytes that grow off of the matrix right here, that come off in sheets, right, flat sheets, and they're filled with keratin. Do you think there is more or less keratin in the keratinocytes that make up a nail compared to the epidermis? More keratin, right? Because nails are stronger. That's the compound that makes nails really strong. Okay, so make sure that you know the growing center is the nail matrix, not the root. So you can't use like a model of a plant to understand a nail, okay? It seems like it should be labeled the same, but it's not. And, oh, I didn't pass the sign-in sheet around, did I? Ah, rats. Too late to pass it around now. Okay. Guys, remind me next time. All right, so let's go over some functions of the integumentary system really fast. Protection, right? Protects you from water loss, right? It keeps bacteria out of your body. Protection also because melanin is produced. It protects you from sunlight. And also the skin produces hair. That's a heat insulator. And you got eyebrows, right? You got hair in your eyebrows and your eyelashes. That helps prevent foreign bodies from entering your eyes, because there are sensory nerve fibers around those hair follicles. If something brushes against your eyebrow or eyelashes, what's going to happen right away? Immediately, you're going to blink, right? Unless you're deliberately holding your eye open, like if a doctor wants to look in there or something, okay? And hair in your ears and your nose, again, prevents foreign objects from getting in those orifices. And nails are important because they protect the ends of your digits. So a finger is a digit, a toe is a digit. That's the anatomical name for those structures, so it protects your fingertips. And also important for self-defense. Maybe not so much in people, but other organisms for sure. Skin is important for temperature regulation. When you're hot, the blood vessels in the skin dilate. All right, they get bigger. That allows more blood to reach the skin so that it carries heat from the inside of your body to your skin where you can radiate it off, or where it can be used to evaporate water, which cools you down. Right? Vasoconstriction of those same blood vessels will occur when you're cold. When you're losing too much body temperature, those blood vessels will constrict so that you will maintain core body temperature. So you'll keep the body inside, you'll keep heat inside your body. Right? And then also vitamin D production. Sunlight and a precursor to vitamin D in your skin will make an active form of vitamin D. And vitamin D is necessary for you to absorb calcium in your diet. So without vitamin D, you can't absorb calcium into your body. And what would be one of the effects of that if you can't absorb calcium? Because we talked about bone connective tissue and we said the matrix is made out of calcium, so you have really brittle bones if that happens. That's one thing, and later on in the class you'll realize that that's not the most important thing calcium is used for in your body, but that's pretty important. All right, and then also your skin is important for sensation, protecting your body. If it is a damaging stimulus, you have pain sensation. You have heat, if it's too hot, burning yourself, you can tell, or cold, if you're going to freeze part of your body. So that's good for protection, and then pressure and vibration as well. All right, so aging, I don't think is on the test, but here's a little slide you can read about skin aging. But the only thing I'll say, oh, I got a couple minutes yet. The most damaging thing you can do to your body that ages it prematurely is to go out in sunlight. Sunlight damages skin, okay? And that's especially true if you're a person that produces very little melanin. You're very sensitive to the damaging effects of sunlight. So it's always recommended that you wear clothing to protect your body and sunscreen, all right? And that's probably also why, as you look from person to person, the darker their skin is, the younger it looks for a longer period of time, because it's protected because they have more melanin. So African Americans have really young looking skin until late in life compared to Caucasians because they have what? Because they have more melanin to protect them when they go out in sunlight. So if you really want to maintain the youth of your skin, what should you do? Yeah, just stay out of the sun. Just don't go out there and cook yourself in the sun. It's really damaging to those collagen fibers. It's damaging to those elastic fibers, so your skin is going to start to sag. And then that sunlight is also a carcinogen, so you're much more prone to getting different kinds of cancers, right? Squamous cell carcinoma, basal cell carcinoma, and even melanoma, which is a cancer of melanocytes. All right, so be careful with sunlight out there. All right, so that's it for the integumentary system. Sorry about that sign-in sheet. Who's not here today? I cannot tell. Okay.